It's the movie that made vampires sexy. Well, Lost Boys made vampires sexy. And Fright Night, Daughters of Darkness, like 10 Hammer movies, The Hunger, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Brides of Dracula, Near Dark, the original Dracula. Look, it was the movie that made vampires 90s sexy. Interview with the Vampire, The Vampire Chronicles was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, my name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two people who aren't in this movie because they're women. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Hi.
And Camila Adams.
Hello.
Yes, Tropic Thunder was last time, 77 and a third. That is right in the comedies we like pretty well. Yay. Pocket. What About Bob was 78 and a half, Scrooge is 78 and a third, School of Rock was 78, Liar Liar and Mrs. Doubtfire both 77 and two thirds.
Wow.
Tropic Thunder 77 and a third, 9 to 5, 76. That's where we land.
I think it's probably because a lot of them don't age well. Just like there's a lot of when we're looking at them through 2023 eyes or whatever, I really loved this when it came out, but I'm gonna have to deduct a few points for
so that. We have to give it that soft high score,
right?
And also I think comedy seems to change more than a lot of genres.
Yeah,
there's a lot of movies that in the 80s, I always think of Ghostbusters when it came out was regarded as one of the funniest movies ever. Mm-hmm. And today I love Ghostbusters. I enjoy watching it, but I'm not laughing the whole time.
Right.
I laugh a lot. I think I think Ghostbusters is great, but
it is
saw it when I was 5, so I can't probably saw it when I was 3.
Philosophical discussions of comedy.
Love it.
Aside, Camila, you had something about Tropic Thunder that you didn't say during the Tropic Thunder
episode.
It's
about the Jeffersons theme song.
Okay, so
we put a pin in it between episodes.
What's funny is, it's relevant, but it's not to do with it directly. Mm-hmm. So my sister's wedding, I was the maid of honor, obviously. I'm the only sister she's got. So I had to do
you
the
better
toast.
Be.
Right. I do the toast. I do this glorious little beautiful thing. It starts off with when my mom told me that she was pregnant with her, I was watching Different Strokes.
Oh.
That's what I remember. Oh. That's one of my earliest memories.
I love that.
So I go on and on, the usual maid of honor toast banter. And then I get to the end of it and I'm like, so, the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. And everybody's just like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Firm, right. Camila. Yeah.
What might be right for you may not be right for some. Mm-hmm. And my sister's husband is just like, yeah. And then I forget what the next line is, but I start to see the people over the wheels are turning, wait a minute. Then my sister gets it first and she's like, so pissed, but found it hilarious. So
I love that. That's precious.
What year was this wedding?
They have been married for 7 years.
Oh, I didn't know if Tropic Thunder stole it for you or you stole it from Tropic Thunder.
Actually, I didn't even...
Did not make the connection?
No, I didn't make the connection until we were watching it.
It goes to show that sitcom theme songs are profound works of art.
Right. Yeah. Just because the song don't make it not true.
Yeah. Right.
And it was just one of those things. I wanted to because I wanted my personality to come through. Of course, I can't just do that and not jab and jive her a little bit.
No.
So without it getting personal, the whole stupid oh, you were such a pain in the ass when you were little. It was something nice that. And everybody got joshed.
I really hate those speeches.
What?
I can expand it to wedding speeches generally. I mean, yours sounds great. I think you found a way through it. But the moment that anyone says I am so happy to be here today with the person that I grew up with, giving them away to a person who I consider part of my, just shut up. Just make a joke and say cheers.
Right. Yeah. It do get to be a little bit long winded, but I have only ever had to give one speech at a wedding.
At husband's best friend's wedding a couple weeks ago, her sister was like, well, Jen did this for me twice, so I might as well do it for her once. Everybody
were there speeches at your
Oh yeah.
Were there good speeches in your
voice? I think so.
Well, they were about you. We need someone else to review them. We're here to talk about vampires, yes, everybody.
There were no vampires at my wedding, which I think is the biggest problem.
Right.
It's the biggest shocker. Yes.
Certainly was it brought a night wedding? The it fashion
was.
Down.
It was.
I said last time, I think I've seen this less than the rest of the room. I saw it once, maybe 10 years ago, and liked it, but that doesn't do in this panel.
And you put it in the drawer. I was like, all right, that was
yeah,
enough.
Sure. Yeah. Sure interviewed that vampire. Camille, I think you're at the top of the heap.
Probably.
Here.
Yeah. I've seen this movie like a bajillion times.
Did you see it when it came out?
I did.
And you were like a teenager?
It had to have been like a 17 or 19.
Okay.
When this came, or 17 or 18. Actually, okay, so it came out in the theaters, I guess 94 it was.
November of 94.
Yeah, okay, so I had already graduated from high school at that mm-hmm. point, and so I did not get to see it in the actual theater because there was just, like, you know, a ban on these types of things in my household. And I was still living at home.
Got it.
But
specifically,
just like the movies, occult. Horror movies, okay. to the occult and mm-hmm. vampire. And for whatever, I don't know how, to this day, I don't remember how it got on my radar mm-hmm. because I remember reading about the making of it and like when it was announced and all that business and like keeping up with like behind the scenes photos mm-hmm. of like, you know, this and People Magazine and all that business. And I read the book because I knew the movie was coming out. But I was super stoked about it. So any hoozles, I finally saw it on the big screen at like a screening at the college I was going to at University of Toledo. So yeah, so that was in the theater when I saw it.
That counts. That counts.
That's the big void of box office attendance is like later free college screenings.
Right.
Yes.
And I would love to know what does well and what does not.
Right.
That's how I saw The Matrix Reloaded.
Really?
Yes.
I walked out of The Matrix Reloaded at a college screening because of all the stupid ways to screw up showing a movie. They turned off the overhead lights, but left lights on in a ring around the screen.
Oh, my goodness.
So just completely... making it impossible to see anything because they didn't understand that movies are light. It's right. literal light. You don't need to light up the light.
Christopher Nolan rides at dawn.
I know.
Like when I went to see Insidious last month, they did not turn the house lights off like 10 minutes into the movie. I'm like about to freak out. I'm like, I ran out into the theater, into the hallway, just like, they're not, the lights aren't off.
Was it, I mean, I'm guessing they probably don't do sensory friendly screenings of horror movies. That's kind of a contradiction.
Kind of a probably. Moo point.
Yes,
yeah.
But.
No,
point.
But she was like, they came and turned it off.
Well, I've got a lot to say about the theatrical experience, but we'll get
there. We'll get there. I was about to go on a rant about exit signs glowing onto the screens. That's too deep in the weeds when we have an important film to talk yes. about. What's your history with this vampire?
I must have watched this like 30 times as a kid. Like, this was like one of the movies that, you know, sleepovers happen and it's like, what are we going to watch? We're going to watch the vampires make humpies at each other again. I had not seen it in its entirety probably in 20, 25 years, though. Mm. So it really felt like the parts that I remember yeah. really well. Yeah. But like most of the middle of the movie was like I was watching it for the first time.
I mean, the shit gets a little like a little bit. Like,
honestly, yeah. Well, can I recap the plot?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that. And then we'll share our fresh... still warm-blooded. I don't know. This metaphor isn't going anywhere. Here's what happens in this movie.
Okay, wait. Before I do this, all right. I do this all the time. This is my standard preface. Okay, I really struggle with pronouncing the names of almost every character in this movie. I want to call them something that they are not.
Lestat. Lewis.
Like, you don't have to.
Lewis. Claudia, because that's my sister-in-law's name. And I have always thought of Lestat. I say Lestat, but in the movie they say Lestat. In the trailer they say Lestat, though.
Yeah.
So me and trailer voice guy are aligned.
I'm pretty sure it's Lestat.
Okay. Yeah. But they say Lestat.
Yeah, I know.
In the film.
It's pretty. Yeah. Anyway, that's one of the things.
That's one of the things. Yeah. Do you watch the TV show?
I did watch it.
Okay. Do they call him Lestat?
I'm pretty sure it's Lestat.
Great. That's canonical. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm ready to go.
So Go.
For some reason, vampire Brad Pitt is telling Christian Slater his life story. In 1791 New Orleans, Louis was a moody little bitch until vampire Tom Cruise, aka Lestat, bit him and turned him into a moody little vampire. Lestat and Louis flirt, murder people, and Louis broods about it. They turn child Kirsten Dunst into a vampire and raise her as their daughter, like bros do. She grows up, but not in her body, and she gets mad about it and tricks Lestat into drinking dead blood, which is vampire poison. They leave him to die in a swamp. As they prepare to go to Europe, he comes back from the swamp. They set him on fire and leave him for the dead again. In Paris, they find a bunch of theater kid vampires, including Antonio Banderas, who also desperately wants to hump Louis. And Antonio saves Louis from being trapped in a tomb, but does not save Kirsten Dunst from turning into ash, so Louis breaks off their obnoxiously undefined relationship of intense stares. Returns to New Orleans, Lestat's been having a good sit to become less dead. Back in the frame story, Christian Slater pulls all the wrong lessons and asks to become a vampire. Louis won't do it. Lestat pops out of the backseat and takes care of that, but at no point do any boys actually kiss. 0 stars.
But this was gay at the time, right? 51 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, this wasn't like, oh, we looked back and it turns out. I mean, they everyone knew what they were doing, right?
Okay, so you read the book. I texted my sister yesterday, and I was like, I need your help with vampire shit. And she's like, I am your woman.
Here I am.
Yes. And then I was like, in the Anne Rice books. Also, I keep wanting to say Anne Rand.
Dude.
Anne Rand, who writes about vampires who only care about themselves.
And I was like, in the Anne Rice books, do they actually hump? And she's like, I've actually never read the books. And I was like, what are you doing to me? What do I keep you around for? She did watch the TV show. She's like, on the TV show, they hump.
They absolutely do. It's no longer a suggestion in the TV show.
Well, thank fucking God.
I know, because it's like, I mean, it's all there, guys. Like,
I don't care that it was the 90s. This is stupid. It's just dumb to have these guys all in love with each other. And, like, raising a child together, and then they don't kiss.
Saying things like, will you come or no? It's like every line is like, right?
You guys know what's happening, yeah? Yeah.
That's my question. Is this, what's the famous 50s movie that's all gay and the...
Rope?
It's not Spartacus. It's
Spartacus is also extremely it's Spartacus, gay.
I'm sorry. Who's in Spartacus?
Tony Curtis, yes.
Is it Peter O'Toole?
Peter O'Toole's in Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, okay. Whoever's
Laurence in... Laurence Olivier's in Spartacus.
Yes.
And he was the one who knew it was gay.
And Tony Curtis is like, this isn't gay.
Tony Curtis.
Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, if they walked in here right now, would say, we knew it was gay, right?
I'm sure they would. I'm sure they would. I don't know what Scientology stance is.
I was just going to say, aren't like, people always saying that Tom Cruise is a Scientologist because he doesn't want people to know that he has sex with men?
Yeah, that's a thing.
One so of the like, so but maybe, the, but maybe Brad would be like,
wouldn't
yeah,
he not choose to be in this film?
Was he a Scientologist yet? In 1993 when they're filming this?
I kind of assumed he always was.
I know, I just kind of seems like...
Not like Beck always was, but like I don't think he was raised in the church, but I thought as soon as he became famous, he was a Scientologist, but I don't know.
It is interesting where this movie is all about the pretty men with the flowing hair and the being on top of each other and writhing around, and yet they throw in titties every 20 minutes like clockwork just to to be the beard of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. That's those like homophobes that make the gay jokes, but like, oh, but I love it. Oh, titties.
I'll let you off the hook. You showed me enough tits.
Right.
It is very horny. I mean, there are few mainstream movies that are this horny from beginning to end, right?
Yeah. The one part where they bite that chick's boob and
bar
then
or in the hotel room.
I think it's at the hotel room.
Yeah. Love that scene.
It is so weirdly sexy, and I am not normally into vampires as a sexy thing because I don't like blood. But I'm like, oh yeah, that lady's bleeding boob way too hot. What?
it's such a fantastic scene of just like, I think this is probably the most acting that I have ever witnessed come from Tom Cruise.
Oh yeah, he's really trying.
He's doing the most, and I love every fucking bit of it. Like, he absolutely embodied what was written on the page for Lestat. And that scene where he's just like, where he loses his shit and just is taunting her, kicking open the cop, like, oh my God, that's like one of my top favorite scenes in this movie, probably in all movies.
He's really terrifying and compelling. And I really think he does a great job in this movie in a way that I don't think I would have said when we brought it up last week. I wouldn't, you know, right. we were talking about Tom Cruise last week.
Right. And I think I listed this.
Yes.
It's really.
We manifested it.
I know, right?
We talked during Silence of the Lambs about how hard it is to be super evil and super compelling.
Yeah.
You know, usually it tips one way or the other. And he's despicable, and yet I miss him whenever he's not on screen.
Yes. Right?
Which is one of the problems with the movie. There's not enough of him.
Exactly. When he's gone, that's when I'm like, all right.
Even though Antonio Banderas shows up being hotter than he could possibly be.
Really?
I think he's so fucking hot in this movie. It's outrageous.
I am so annoyed by the fact that he's supposed to be a French vampire.
Yeah, that's
with
a little
that
silly.
Fucking Spanish accent.
Just make him Spanish.
Right.
Just make him Spanish.
I sailed over here in 1812. We're done. That took less than a second.
They have a land border. He could have walked.
Oh, right. I forgot what country is near what country.
He probably would have sailed, let's be real.
Just to be fancy.
Regardless, think also this movie, I really like long hair on guys, and I think this movie might be at fault.
Could be. I don't know. Again, like, I don't remember how this even got on my radar, because before this, the only other vampire movie that I recall seeing and loving is Lost Boys. Mm-hmm. I don't think I even saw another vampire movie before this.
I saw a Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Was there a lookalike for Kiefer Sutherland in Lost Boys in the opening credits of this movie, or was that just me?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
A guy walks by, like, when we're panning through San Francisco before anything happens, and there's a dude with short spiky hair and a white shirt, and I'm like,
I would love if that was purposeful.
Secret crossover.
Right. Well, with the guy who wrote Lost Boys was inspired by after reading Interview with the Vampire.
I did not know that.
I found
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Also, like, you know, he was his whole thing with the Lost Boys. This isn't a Lost Boys podcast, but it was. Exactly. Because of, like, he was like the whole Peter Pan thing was like, what if Peter Pan was a vampire, and that's why he was stealing the children?
All right. I have a question about vampire rules in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So when Brad Pitt gets turned into a vampire, he gets weird eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when Kirsten Dunst gets turned into a vampire, she gets curly hair.
Mm-hmm.
Does turning into a vampire change your appearance in some way? And how is that determined? Because she says something to Lestat like, you did this to my hair.
I don't think she means the curly. I think the fact that she chopped it off and it grew back instantly.
That's
right.
When
but
we
like
saw
literally
her,
when she transforms, yeah, her hair like perms
maybe,
up.
But maybe that was the natural state, because we found her. She was like pretty dingy and dirty.
Oh.
And like, had she had a good wash,
there you go.
Maybe it would have curled right back up.
All right.
So vampire, good conditioner.
And Brad,
I think it just makes you hot. And that gets weird when it's a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
So the magic vampire hot rules just go, just make her look real lively.
Yeah. Also, I think Kirsten Dunst is fantastic.
Yeah.
She's so good in this. I think that she's fantastic, period. I love her as a performer. But like, wow, she just went for it in this movie as a child.
Yeah.
Before we pick another garden path to walk down, Interview with the Vampire, : The Vampire Chronicles, was released on November 11th, 1994, the 29th number one movie of that year. It won its opening weekend with $36.3 million, easily defeating fellow debut The Santa Claus. A little early in the year. That's your problem there. November 11th, which debuted in second with $19.3 million, just a 1 week number one movie in America, falling the next week to Star Trek Generations. Spent 6 weeks in the top 10, a total of $105.2 million, 11th place for 1994, just about $2 million behind Pulp Fiction in 10th, and Speed is in 8th.
Great.
To hit our former episodes. It set several records at the time. If you look at the Wikipedia pages that list every number one movie year by year, it will tell you what record it broke. Without getting into what holds that record now. It's a weird way of doing it. Anyway, at the time, this broke Home Alone 2's record for highest weekend debut in the month of November. It broke Lethal Weapon 3's record for highest debut for an R-rated film at the time. And it broke Bram Stoker's Dracula's record. Grammar in this sentence is terrible. for the highest debut for a vampire film. off of that, I was trying to figure out where this falls on the all-time list of vampire films.
Interesting.
And Box Office Mojo has a chart. I don't know how complete it is or how we're defining, but I'm going off of that, but dismissing all of the Hotel Transylvanians. Yeah. That's no.
Thank you.
On that, what would you think? Allegedly, this is the seventh highest grossing vampire movie. What?
Twilight.
The top five are the five Twilights.
Okay, yes. And then six is Bram Stoker's Dracula?
No, this outgrossed Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, this did?
Yes. The surprise number six is Van Helsing.
Oh, wow.
Surprisingly made about $120 million. This is ahead of Bram Stoker's Dracula, which only made about $82
million. Oh, fascinating.
Blade is $70 million, and Blade 2 is also $82
million. That's also... movies like Blade, where like they become so influential and also are on TV constantly, it's very hard to think, oh, that wasn't a huge hit.
Right.
Still haven't seen Blade.
What?
It's good.
I should probably watch it before the new one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should. Is this true that Mahershala is actually going to be Blade?
Mm-hmm. I mean, they were just about to get going when the strike hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they literally were like getting their
fix it.
Like they were like pulling the trailers up, and then they were like, put him back.
He was just about to put the fangs in. Like, wait, no, okay. I didn't want to wear these for 6 months anyway. Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
This was nominated for Oscars?
Two.
Two. Art Direction?
Yes. Losing Two.
Was this the year that Restoration happened?
I don't know what Restoration
is. It's a movie that won a bunch of craft Oscars that otherwise doesn't exist.
If that's true, it didn't lose this one.
The Madness of King George?
Yes, it lost to the... What's that?
Oh, it's okay. It's a movie where George the Third is... becoming mentally unfit because of, I believe, syphilis. Oh, sure. And Helen Mirren, and it's a comedy, but it's not good. Mm-hmm.
One more.
Costume design.
No.
Score?
Yes. Lost score. Original score to...
90, Forrest Gump?
The Lion King.
Oh,
the rare occasion where a Disney breaks through for score, because it's always song and rarely score, but...
With the Lion King, it's deserved.
A good one.
I'm surprised, honestly, that this was nominated for Oscars, because one thing that I found notable was how little the art direction and costuming changes over the course of one century and two continents.
Seriously.
Yeah, he really only, you know.
It really hurts.
It's modern, so I have a ponytail now, is about as far as it goes.
Yeah, it really fucks with me because it's like there's no title cards to tell me what time we're in, and then your outfits aren't really changing.
Right. I need it. I need some more information on the screen.
0-2 at the Oscars, but it won BAFTAs for cinematography and production design. Kirsten Dunst was nominated for the Best Supporting Actress Globe.
Oh, so, good for her.
Good for her.
But, see, you know, as much as we say Globe's going to Globe, sometimes they do things like that, which are
nice
cool.
Nice little thing.
Yeah.
But boy, was this all over the MTV Movie Awards.
Yes, it was. I remember this one.
Except for not Best Kiss, because no one kisses.
No one kisses. It was nominated for Best Movie, lost to Pulp Fiction. Brad Pitt won Best Male Performance. Look at this stacked roster. Brad Pitt for Interview with a Vampire, Tom Hanks in Forrest Gump, Brandon Lee in The Crow, Keanu Reeves in Speed, and John Travolta in Pulp Fiction.
Wow.
And it goes to Brad Pitt.
Because it's MTV.
Yeah.
Because it's MTV.
He's so bad.
But this bullseye of endless charisma, no acting chops is kind of perfect for this character.
Yeah.
Just for being a broody little shit that you like to look at.
Yeah.
Great.
Exactly. Brad is not bad. Like
he's bad.
He found his groove in this. Like, you know, because Louis is not an intriguing character.
No, he's just a sad guy.
As opposed to when we flip, like, I urge anybody who has not watched it yet, the series.
Yeah.
Jacob Anderson, I think is his name. He has brought Louis to
he's
a whole
new Louis.
Yes, he's to a whole new level. He used to, formerly, he was Grey Worm on Game of Thrones.
He's very good looking.
He's so good looking. And he has a musical career, too, and he's good at that, too.
Okay, all right. I will go watch him kiss a boy.
Kirsten Dunst won the Breakthrough Performance MTV Movie Award.
Good for her.
Best on-screen duo for Tom and Brad. Lost to Keanu and Sandra and Speed.
Good for them. Yeah, that's right. That's my girl.
Well, Tom was really carrying that load.
Yeah.
And Tom lost best villain to, who's the villain in Speed? Sorry.
Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper in Speed.
I mean, I'm sure that character has a name, but who cares?
Right. And Brad Pitt, second award of the night, won Most Desirable Male. Tom Cruise and Christian Slater were also nominated, as was Keanu and Andy Garcia in When a Man Loves a Woman.
Okay. I feel like Brad won that one fair and square.
Yeah.
Seems
right.
I'll allow it.
I'm not getting into Anne Rice because that's
a lot.
That's a lot to cover, other than to say, I did wonder why there wasn't a sequel, because this made a lot of money, and it's Queen of the Damned.
Yeah, there's a sequel.
Terrible.
No actors return.
Terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I was so upset about this. Like, you know, I
truly don't know if I've ever seen it. I want to say I have, but I can't.
Stuart Townsend is Lestat. Soul Charlize.
Yes.
Okay.
He had a secret family when he was with my girl Charlize. So
I didn't know that part.
Yep.
And this was like Aaliyah was Akasha, I think, was the queen of
the Damned. So she is the Queen of the Damned.
Yeah. Yes. Poor thing. Like,
was she good at acting?
Is that where her best song's from? That
I don't think any of her music was in this movie.
I swear the one with Timbaland is from this movie.
Are you that somebody?
Yeah.
No. It probably could have made things a little bit better because, you know, Lestat is a rock star in this one. But
oh, that's right.
It's so bad.
I have seen that movie.
She did the best that she could with what she had. And, you know, she died before they finished it. Her brother, I think, did overdubs for her voice.
Oh, my God.
It was just a bad movie.
That's terrible.
And it sucks. Like, that wasn't her acting debut, but that's what we were left with.
Yeah. We deserved more. Yeah. She deserved more. Yeah.
Oh, no. Queen of the Damned. I say oh, no, in the sense of I'm incorrect, and oh, no, in the sense of oh, no. she is not on the soundtrack because it had a nu metal soundtrack produced by Jonathan Davis of Korn.
Yep.
It is the song I am thinking of. The two songs that I'm thinking of that are surprisingly from this movie are the Deftones' Change in the House of Flies, which is an excellent song, and Disturbed's Down with the Sickness is from Queen of the Damned.
It's really just like a two-hour music video.
Oh, boy. Well, anyway, this is all to say, Anne Rice fought with the studio over the direction of Queen of the Damned and actually wanted another movie made first, because there's a book in between Interview with the Vampire and
Armand.
Right. Wanted that made. They wouldn't.
That's Antonio Banderas.
Yeah,
right?
And that one's super gay.
Oh,
that's probably
sense.
Why the studio
probably
like,
why they
I mean,
skipped
this.
Ahead.
I will say, like, Lestat is his relationship with Louis, like, seems a little bit like, I'm just stuck with you and you're stuck with me more so than like I am profoundly in love with you. And Armand is like, all I want to do is fuck you all day and all night.
It's Armand is real desperate. Like coming in to shoot a shot.
Yes.
Like, I will save you from this abusive relationship.
He is, as the children say, a simp.
I am not familiar with this term.
I'm too old to know if I'm using it correctly, but
probably.
I know that when Colin's
is anyone in this room going to help? No.
One of Colin's 20-year-old coworkers told him that he's a simp for me, and I was like,
"That's true."
Well, I was like, "No, but that implies I don't like him back."
No, it doesn't.
Okay,
not necessarily.
All right. Well, if anyone who listens to this podcast is under the age of 25, unlikely, let us know.
It's more likely that somebody listening to this podcast has a child that's 25.
Shout out to the gentleman who came up to me at Taco Mania and said he listened to the podcast. Sorry, I didn't get your name. Not under the age of 25. So no help there. But hi. Hey, buddy. Thanks for coming down. Anne Rice was not happy with Queen of the Damned and the whole process, so just stopped giving rights after that. That's why that's the only sequel.
And then she died, and then they made a TV show.
The only she approved of the TV show.
Oh, okay.
The only thing that she gave.
It's that time. Let's do it. Let's get it, guys.
Could be back soon now that she, you know, unless that will was very specific, like the Back to the Future people who Robert Zemeckis and somebody else who has a hand in Back to the Future are just like, nope, never.
Good
never,
for
never,
them.
Ever, ever. Isn't that nice when that happens?
Oh, I love it.
So, this watching it this time, and tell me if I'm wrong, because this was a case where I started watching it late and didn't make it and finished the next day.
Mm-hmm.
There's not so much like a series of connected events that flow one into the other. This is just some vampire shit that happens,
shit that happens.
And that's what happens when it was very ambitious trying to make that book into, because the book flows much better, obviously. But yeah, but when we get to Paris, I guess, that's when I really stop caring. Like, after Lestat gets tossed up in the flames again. It's like, all right. And that play thing, I usually fast forward it. Like,
it's so long.
That, yeah, like, we get it. They're to see theater. Like, and shit, and hinky shit is happening. All right, good, move on.
It feels like it goes on forever and ever. And I'm saying this as somebody who likes the weird orgy scene in Eyes Wide Shut. So, yikes.
I mean, me being who I am, I do love that scene and was thinking, how could I produce this show? Can you pull this off today?
I do think that there being a society of weird theater kid vampires is very funny.
Yeah.
And I think the casting of Stephen Ray as lead theater kid is inspired.
I think he, with very little screen time, like, he did amazing. Like, he was awesome. Like,
he was
very captivating to watch.
And he's barely involved.
He's like such a bitch. Like, I love it when Louis is walking back. From seeing Claudia's ashes, and he's just like,
gotcha.
Although at this point, that is really when what is this movie about? What are we waiting to find out? Because you've just introduced that this is kind of about, oh, the only crime a vampire can commit is killing another vampire.
Mm-hmm. Which is just silly.
Which is just silly, especially because apparently the punishment for killing a vampire is everyone killing a vampire.
Right.
Which death penalty debate, but let's not go there. But as soon as we introduce that, the thing we keep talking about is how it's not okay to have made a child vampire, which would seem to be another law.
Seems like a really good, reasonable vampire law.
Yeah, like, this is dumb, guys. Don't do this.
But it's presented as a lesser crime to killing the vampire, even though the thing that we'll do if we find out that you made a child vampire is kill the child.
Yes.
Are we all just too frilly and fancy to be considering the rules of this universe?
They need to be introduced to the concept of restorative justice.
Yeah.
I also would like to point out they didn't kill Lestat.
And no one actually killed him.
Right.
He's
and
fine.
I feel like somebody
should have. Nobody, no crime.
Right. I feel like somebody should have sensed that.
Right.
Like,
also, why didn't they kill Lestat? Is Lestat, does he have special vampire powers, or is it just like really that hard to kill?
It's very hard.
It's hard. They tossed
him
in.
Except for Stephen Ray, it's just slish, and then his head's over here, and he's dead.
Well, here's the thing, they set Lestat on fire twice.
Twice!
But they tossed him in the swamp. So he's like, when he comes back, he's like, you know, thank the blood of the alligator.
Right.
And all of like the putrid life of the Mississippi. Like,
he's so good at that scene.
Oh, God.
he's so good at that scene.
Like, I fucking love that so much. So he's just like, he's a man of opportunity. He was like, they did not do a good enough job. They should have chopped him up and scattered him around.
Yeah.
Yes.
And in the last 5 minutes, was this about Christian Slater? No, not at all. But I guess that's what we were building to.
And it really does frustrate me that he hears the wrong lessons from this story. And also, imagine how fucking long that went on for.
Right?
With Brad Pitt talking like
I feel
this.
Like it should have been days.
Right? And I would be like, wow, your life sucks.
Yeah. Like, I just, like, Brad's just like, I didn't tell it right.
Yes, he did it. Clearly he did it. Or this Christian Slater guy has some issues.
Yeah. Well, he went on about movies for a while at the end, and that really activated him and made it seem fun. Christian Slater's thinking, maybe I'll get to stick around to see a technological advancement I cannot even fathom. Won't that be great? No, it's the internet.
It was kind of cool to see Sunrise like 1 week after I actually watched Sunrise.
Oh, that was in there? When it was Sunrise, Nosferatu, Something and Superman is the history of film. Gone with the Wind.
And it made me
Gone with the Wind,
about,
Superman. The
it made me
of
think about the end of Babylon.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I started rewatching last night, partially because of that.
I do love a and then the movies moment in the movies. That's
it is
nice.
It is a strange left turn though.
It's just
a lot of they just had to chop up a lot of shit. And I guess in 94, we were just like, sure, okay, that's cohesive.
But you've read the books?
Yeah, just the three.
Is there a reason why allegedly their mission is to find more vampires and they go everywhere else in the world and then get to the place where the vampire you know is from?
I think the point is Louis is an idiot.
So I don't know if this is covered in the recap. So to explain what they think they killed Lestat, Louis wants to find more vampires to figure out
being a vampire. Yeah,
being a vampire.
Yeah, he wants his buddies.
And they go all the way around the world for 100 years, eventually ending up in Paris, which is the place that he knows that Lestat came from and was turned into a vampire.
Right.
Probably where he should have started.
Yeah. Probably where he should have started. Yeah. No, they went to Egypt. No, that's mummies, Louis. You're way off.
I mean, it's been like a bajillion years since I've read it, so I don't recall if that was specifically stated in there, but... I don't know. I just get the impression that Louis is an idiot.
Just an idiot.
Like, he's just not all the way there. He's sad sack.
He's such a sad sack. Also, while he's going on his whole, like, I'm sad all the time because I have to kill people to live. Meanwhile, he's enslaving dozens of people.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Like,
sir,
reconsider sir, your life.
I need you to open up the scope.
Yes. Just...
And pretty much the only one he doesn't really have a crisis about killing is Sandy Newton.
That's right.
It's
like, it's a little bit like, you know, pull it. But my thing is, here's this. So he kills her. Mm-hmm. He comes out and he's like, yeah, your master's the devil. You're all free men.
Yes.
I'm going to need you to sign something. Like, cause this.
What, are we just supposed to walk down the street? Right. Oh, yeah. He totally said that. He's on fire and gone now. But he said it first.
He totally ate my sister. But, like, we said we were free.
Also, Tandy Way Newton just deserves so much better. Mm-hmm. Like, I just look at her early career especially, and I... just want to rip my skin off.
Louis never had a problem he didn't solve by setting something on fire. And I do enjoy that for him.
Yes.
I also like how, you know, Lestat's response to it. He comes back, he's like, you fucking bitch. Like, this is a nice place. This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why you start to feel sympathy for the devil.
Right. Yes.
A little
God,
on the nose music choice.
That cover is so fucking bad.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Please allow. No, no, no. Nope. Shh, nope. Nope.
Axel.
Nope. Not today.
The trailer.
So you want me to tell you the story of my life? I'm flesh and blood, but not human. I haven't been human for 200 years.
From the novel by Anne Rice. From Neil Jordan, the director of The Crying Game.
I've come to answer your prayers.
His name is Lestat.
I can see you lying on a bed of satin.
He chose one man. He gave him infinite power, eternal life, and a daughter who would be forever young. And then he took the light of day.
You're a vampire. Never knew what life was until it ran out in a red gush over your lips. I can't stand this any longer.
You made us what we are, didn't you?
God kills indiscriminately, and so shall we.
Monster.
Unhappy family.
Hate and we end her suffering and yours. For do not doubt, you are a killer.
I want some more.
Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Stephen Ray, Antonio Banderas, Kirsten Dunst, and Christian Slater. Interview with the Vampire.
It's not a good trailer, but it sure is a time capsule.
Yes, and it is an accurate representation of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's kind of long and drawn out and loses you in the middle a little bit.
Why is this so gay and then not gay? The one thing that
from the director of The Crying Game.
Yes. Which is not a gay love story.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So anyway, the part where he says, and then he took away daylight. First of all, that's not the order of events, Mr. Movie Trailer Man. But also, that's hilarious.
We're making fun of it a lot because you can all day. But that all this said, it's fun. It's
movie?
Yeah.
Yes, listen, I enjoyed watching this. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's not good.
I think it's good.
There are things in it that are very good.
It's very good at a lot of things. The big one for me is character and place. The sense of place in New Orleans is great. In San Francisco is great. In Paris is great. And that's one of those lost, almost lost arts. Mm. You know, I'll talk not too much about Haunted Mansion when we get to You Can't Handle the Truth. But the big failing of Haunted Mansion is it's a movie about a place with no sense of place.
Right.
Mm.
And this really makes you feel everywhere you are and really makes you luxuriate in these settings that are really cool and really fun to look at. That is enough to overcome the fact that it makes no sense. No one ever does anything logical, and it's not about anything other than that. The Letterboxd list, by the way, was 90s movies that were constantly playing on TV when we were growing up.
Correct.
Yes. And I'm looking at the list, and it's like, oh, yeah, these were just always around. That, I had to scroll past every list about gay movies claiming this and every list about secretly gay movies claiming this. And there's just a lot of debate over how gay this movie is happening on Letterboxd. But yeah, it's good. I don't know why Kirsten Dunst didn't just hide under that lady's big dress.
Mm.
And I don't know if that would have worked.
Probably not.
Does it have to hit?
I would imagine it'd have to hit her skin directly.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, she had a lot of dress. You could have just.
You ever get a sunburn through your t-shirt?
No.
Well, it happens.
Okay. Didn't know that was an option.
Also, this.
That's probably what'll kill me.
Madeline could have been cut out of the movie altogether.
Who is Madeline? The mom?
Yeah, the one the fake she mom? Wanted. Yeah, yeah, the one she wanted to.
That is very sad.
I mean, in the book, she's with them much longer.
Oh, okay.
So it makes sense to. You have a sense of like, oh, you know what? But this point is just like, it's just kind of. Nobody cares about her because Lily comes in. She's just like, Claudia.
I felt sorry for her.
Yeah.
I did. I was like, oh, this is a really sad backstory and you're making a terribly sad choice because of it. But
right.
I certainly didn't think that she was a character who had a personality.
Just a long list of people making bad choices. Characters making bad choices.
That's what should be after the colon. Interview with the Vampire. Everyone fucked up.
And no one fucks.
Yeah, I guess there's no moment of actual sex in this movie.
If this movie had actual sex in it, I think that I would be like, yeah, all the things you just described about it being meaning nothing and being messy, 90 points. But it doesn't have sex in it, so I'm going to be saying a lower number.
What's that number?
67.
Yikes. Okay. Yeah, I landed on taking a few away as I think about the movie more. Yeah, 70. And I started at 72 and then we got to talk, Camila.
87.
Okay.
Thank you.
I want to
thank you for making up for my bitterness.
It's okay.
I need Team Horny to be on board sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of what it is. I mean, it's really. But aside from also like those, there's like two or three marvelous scenes from Tom Cruise, like those really heavy Lestat scenes, and then also Kirsten Dunst's performance.
Yeah,
like she's killing it.
That scene where she tries to kill him.
Yeah,
is so good.
Oh, God, when she, like, walks in and is just like, you know, you're the father of lies.
Yep.
I want to, before the next time.
My plans.
Before the next time we record, I really want to come up with the movies that Camila liked more list. I want to analyze it. Because we talk about a lot that you're often the anchor, and you own that. But then there's a few. I want to find the common thread.
It's weird. Think the answer is vibes.
Probably.
I think the answer is
vibes, hot boys. What,
okay.
Like, which ones are Brad Pitt in? Or
still very respectable and right on top of where we've been. 74 and 2/3. We're having a good run of pretty good.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I've enjoyed the last few and we've done like, what, 3 Tom Cruise movies?
We have done.
4?
Firm? We did Eyes Wide Shut.
Eyes Wide Shut. The Firm, Tropic Thunder,
this
Interview with a Vampire. And he's always good for as weird as
he's
he is.
He's very good at being in movies.
Yes.
Is there like a black mark on his record? I mean, there's some movies that aren't that
he's
great.
He's in bad movies, yeah.
Vanilla Sky.
Ooh,
okay.
I hated that.
Yeah. But
I would like to talk to him specifically about getting my $5 back from that.
To the bingo card, Kid Throws Tantrum.
Hells yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm going to say a person not looking at the road.
Yep.
And that gives me a bingo.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Clothes shopping.
Hold on. We got a lot to cover.
Yeah. Title longer than 4 words.
Title longer than 4 words.
Bingo.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
I'm saying single mom. Yeah.
Madeline, is that what her name is?
I was thinking that her dead mom.
I was thinking her dead plague mom.
Okay, I'll take it.
She said, yep, that gives me 2 bingos.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Bingo.
I have three bingo.
That's a bingo.
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 Triple bingo?
We've never had a triple bingo.
We've never had a triple bingo?
We have never had a triple bingo.
Exciting.
Is it on the is it on the thing?
And there's no rules because we haven't come up to it yet. So is let's make a rule.
So, what just happened is we hit a triple bingo. There are so many cliches in Interview with the Vampire that basically all, the whole board was knocked right. out in one go. And what we've decided, we were teasing this a while ago. I think we at one point we said if we had three bad movies in a row, it would trigger Little Treat.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which we determined was instead of a normal episode, we will each pick a movie that was not a number one movie in America that we want the panel to see and discuss. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So at the end of this episode, we will reveal what we're all making one another watch over the next 2 weeks.
And we just decided, we are doing this now. We just decided.
We just decided off
Camille
mic.
Camille and I just decided.
Yeah, I believe
I've had it for a while.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who wants to start?
Well, okay. Should we do You Can't Handle the Truth and then end
okay,
the episode?
Let's do that. Great.
Because
all right.
I want to.
And
I
also, that'll
like,
let you cook a little bit.
In the meantime, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Since I brought it up, Disney's Haunted Mansion. Boy, am I the target audience for this. And
swing and a miss.
I love the Haunted Mansion. I have a good amount of Haunted Mansion merchandise in my home as we speak for the ride. And now they've tried twice, 20 years apart, to turn this thing that people love into a movie, and they cannot figure it out.
Mm.
It is simultaneously too goofy and too serious. Like,
yes.
There's no spookiness to it. It's all wacky ghost hijinks, which is fine, except that also two of the characters... Three of the characters are dealing with the loss of an immediate family member, and they keep toying with, like, really thoughts of self-harm so they could rejoin their loved ones now that they know that ghosts are real, and, like,
what?
Being compelled to the other... It, completely inappropriate for what we're doing here.
Wow.
That sounds really upsetting.
Yeah.
All the cool parts are just the parts where they do a thing from the ride, and when they're not doing a thing from the ride, it's a very generic, like... I can name 20 movies with a cooler Haunted Mansion than Haunted Mansion. The cast is fantastic. Rosario Dawson, Lakeith Stanfield, Danny DeVito, Owen Wilson, Tiffany Haddish, who we've had a lot of, but does her job.
Problematic.
Who's the lady in the crystal ball?
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh,
nice. Look at her. She always pops up. Her and Sigourney Weaver.
They're great, and it's kind of cute and charming enough to float by, but... overall, certainly disappointing.
I can't believe that we talked about Haunted Mansion before we talked about the great cinematic moment
we haven't recorded since Barbenheimer. I forgot.
Oh, I was like, Sean, what are you doing over here?
I forgot that it's Barbenheimer. Because it's like 2 weeks ago.
I know.
It's all old now.
I actually double featured. Have you seen either?
Nope. Not yet.
Did you see them separately?
I saw them separately. I saw Barbie the opening weekend. I saw Oppenheimer yesterday.
Start wherever you like.
I'm going to just say that without hyperbole, Barbie is the greatest achievement in cinema in this or any other universe.
Oh my.
It's really good.
It's just so good. And honestly, like, the thing about it is that I am influenced by the moment and the experience. Yeah. You know, seeing that movie in a room full of mostly happy women. Everybody was happy. Mostly people were women.
Mm-hmm.
There were people my age. There were people older than me. There were people younger than me. Mm-hmm. And all loving it. That felt so fucking good.
Yeah.
After it was over, me and my buddies were all wearing pink. And we go take a picture in front of the poster. We weren't at a place with a box, unfortunately. And this little parade of girls walks by and goes, "Hi, Barbie. Hi, Barbie. Hi, Barbie." And I was like, well, this is it. It's all downhill from here. Actual film discussion-wise, I just think that they really perfectly nailed how to handle this bizarre property and premise. And Margot Robbie knows exactly what she's doing. And Ryan Gosling. I'm kind of mad that Ryan Gosling is the best thing about the movie because I don't want a boy to be the best thing about the Barbie movie. But Ryan Gosling.
Of course he is.
The
I'm Just Ken song is so good.
He should only be allowed to do comedies.
Yeah.
Why is he in so many movies where he's furrowing the whole time.
Blade Runner 2049, they barely let him talk.
Right? Yeah.
He just walks around sad
and a lot.
And
so
Drive is the same way.
Fucking funny and charming.
He's hilarious.
Yes.
He does comedy very well.
Yeah. And Camille, I'm very excited for you with Barbenheimer. Two movies that I don't think you would like very much, but two of your favorite actors do like what will be called career best work.
Yo, I mean, I don't think I'm going to dislike either one of these movies. I'm just not like super stoked about one, spending 3 hours in a movie theater.
Yeah.
So Oppenheimer, I will see you when you hit Vudu.
And can we switch to that for a second? Because what the fuck? I saw this movie. I think it's fine. We could talk about the actual merits of the film in a minute. But can we talk about why do they make such a big deal about seeing it on the biggest possible screen? It's just a fucking movie. It's,
like, is Killian going to come out and touch me?
No, it's like, this kid was walking out of the theater with presumably his mom, and he was like, yeah, I'm glad we saw that in IMAX so I could see a bunch of glitter floating around in water.
Yeah.
And I literally was like, I'm sorry to interrupt. That's the fucking funniest thing I've heard all day. I should have given my business card.
I mean, other than, am I wrong, or you not really see a bomb go off?
No.
The test, a little bit.
Very little.
But for the most part, this is a people talking movie.
It's a people talking movie. And I don't understand why I was so bullied into seeing this in IMAX.
It's absolutely
fine at your house.
It's so you can see Cillian Murphy's balls a little bit. That's you know, without that resolution.
I did not see his balls a little bit because I was cringing so hard. There was spoilers for Oppenheimer.
I mean, I'll probably forget. But
there is a scene. A lot of the movie is Tony Goldwyn, our buddy, interrogating Cillian Murphy. And at one point, he's interrogating him about his first wife, Florence Pugh, and about, well, did you ever see her again? And he had seen her again and had an affair. And then cut to him being naked in the interrogation room. Cut to Florence Pugh, who's dead at this point, is humping him in the interrogation room. There was a movie about the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings. I never saw it. They describe a moment in that movie in the review I read saying that there's a scene where the guy playing Clarence Thomas hangs himself with his necktie. And they were like, okay, we see what you were doing there, but that isolated break from reality stuck out so awkwardly and unpleasantly that it kind of tanked
thing
the whole movie.
Like that.
And that's how I felt about that very fucking weird scene.
And okay, I very much enjoy looking at Florence Pugh naked. Just a lovely thing to do with your time. And Florence Pugh loves being naked. She has said as much. And
she should.
And even holding those two things, it feels icky how much she's naked in this movie.
Yeah.
Because it's a fucking science movie. And she's naked a whole lot.
Yeah. And I don't know what that movie was trying to say, if we want to get to the merits of the film. What is the point? Am I too dumb? Is my little girl brain not able to understand what Oppenheimer's about?
No. Because when you started the sentence, I was like, I know what Oppenheimer's about. And now I'm like, do I know what Oppenheimer's about? I think it's a biopic. I think it's a biopic about, you know, about how much it must have been a bit of a mind fuck to be the smartest person in the world and use it to kill hundreds of thousands of people.
Sure.
And, you know, a little bit about how the American political system tends to just devour everyone who comes within 100 yards of it. And that's about it.
I think that the second part was underdone. And I also think the movie is way too long.
Oh, it is way too long.
I'm kind of like, maybe just do a movie about the second part.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, to get back to me, the man in the room, I still gave it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, of course you did. And it's a sad spaceman movie, even though they don't go to space.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not a 10 because it's too long. I liked it a lot better than Tenet.
I definitely in the top half of Nolan movies for me. That's real faint praise coming from me. I haven't put it on Letterboxd yet because I think I'm hovering around 3 stars and I feel like a jackass. Like my, you know, longstanding, this guy seems like a jerk beef.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm unfairly influenced by that. So I want to sit with it a little bit longer. But honestly, I saw it, you know, less than 24 hours ago, and it's continuing to go down, in my opinion. Also, can I quickly rant about, I tweeted about this, but the guy who shouted at someone using his cell phone, did you see my tweet about this?
No.
Yeah. The guy sitting next to me was on his cell phone. I didn't notice. I was watching the fucking movie. But somebody behind me shouted, "Hey, jackass, put away your cell phone." Okay. So then, of course, I'm like, oh, the man next to me is using his cell phone. And of course, the man next to me isn't going to be shamed putting away his phone. And then also his doctor kept calling him. So maybe the man sitting next to me was about to find out that he had cancer and or a loved one died. But I'm looking at this guy's phone because the guy who shouted at him. So can just everyone chillax is what I'm asking for.
No. I mean you're coming at me because I did yell at someone sitting next to me, I think, to put away their cell phone during Shazam Fury of the Gods.
Putting away your phone, I feel like that's
but I knew that's the thing. I knew that wouldn't be effective.
I feel like it's going to be more
not
effective
for a teen. Mine
yelling.
Was a teenager.
Yeah, okay.
A teenager isn't going to. Excuse me, young man, could you put away? They're not going to, but if you can shame a teenager, so that's what I was trying to do. Row House has now gotten on board with the Alamo Drafthouse policy. If you use your phone, you will be ejected.
Okay.
Right on.
And
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Listen.
I think that's correct.
Board with don't use your phone. What I am not on board with is interrupt my movie-going experience to shame someone else.
It's how obtrusive you find visual things that aren't the screen, which is varies from person to person. For me, that's incredibly I would rather you be talking a little bit than use your phone.
And also, I'm on record that talking during movies is good, actually.
I don't know about good, actually. All right. No. We're
all of my favorite movie-going moments involve people shouting at the screen.
No. Well, yeah, shouting at the screen is one... This has so little to do with Barbie.
Barbie's great.
Barbie's great. We can, I think, and I think that summarizes it. Oppenheimer, your mileage may vary. We can discuss how good Oppenheimer is. Probably still worth seeing. Barbie is great. Barbie is just a joyful experience. Beginning to end, fun, lively. What a cultural moment. I'm just loving that going to the movies is such a thing.
Yes.
I'm sorry
that I just complained about the theatrical experience when the great thing about Barbenheimer is everybody re-embracing the theatrical experience. It is kind of interesting and kind of a shame that, you know, I know that Hollywood would take all the wrong lessons from this. They'd be like, more toy movies and male directors do whatever they want.
That pissed me off so much because the toy movie thing.
Yeah.
The clear lesson of that weekend was... We need some new shit.
Yes.
We need stuff that we haven't seen before. I know that's weird when we're talking about Barbie. There's never been a Barbie movie.
And there's also not been a movie like this.
No, and it felt new. It felt fresh. The lesson was we need variety. I mean, because part of the reason that Barbenheimer became such a thing was because they were so different.
Right.
We need variety, and we need good filmmakers to be given the opportunity to make movies in interesting ways.
Right.
And the next thing they did was... Greenlight 9 toy movies.
But I don't know.
Including Uno.
No.
I do want to keep an open mind because I feel like Tom Haynes has a great Hot Wheels movie in him about the fossil fuel industry.
It was like Hot Wheels, Uno, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, everything. Boo. Yeah.
Martin Scorsese's Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
I am not.
It's about the cycle of violence.
I think I'm going to Detroit this weekend, and Detroit has one of the 70mm theaters, and I might go just to look.
Okay. Report back. Let me know. If you have a fake IMAX screen like we have, don't. Go to an open caption screening, because guess who did not learn how to mix dialogue? Nolan.
Yeah, he still hasn't worked that one out.
Yep.
I don't know why. For a guy who's all about the experience, I don't know why he's also the guy that makes me want to put the subtitles on.
Yeah, well, the subtitles are part of the experience. They are a helpful tool. I did want to quickly acknowledge how it was fun to watch it right after Tropic Thunder, because I do think, you know, I don't know what's coming down the pike, but I feel like Robert Downey Jr. is going to win an Oscar for this.
Yay.
Yeah,
I think he might. And just us talking about how, they really want him to have an Oscar. Mm-hmm. This is a serious boy movie where he plays a serious boy and he doesn't look like he normally looks, and his scenes are primarily in black and white. Dude's getting an Oscar.
I love the discourse that I've been seeing on social media about a bunch of uneducated, very young moviegoers that are like,
oh, leaving Marvel is the best thing that Robert Downey Jr. could have done. He can really act. Boy. I'm like, oh, bless your sweet little soul.
Your little children.
Before I turn it over to Camila, nobody talk to me about Talk to Me, the A24 horror movie with the spooky hand. Yeah. Everyone loves it. Every, like, 95% people are... Didn't hit me right. I mean, I was having a bad day, and that might have much to do with than anything, but it was just, it's one of those horror movies that's no fun, and I didn't think it was good enough to be no fun. Like, if you're going to be no fun, you better be...
Scare the shit out of me.
Right, and it, you know, it was just, a lot of the scares are just extreme, icky, thwompy violence, just like a lot of people hitting themselves or hitting somebody really hard, and like, the premise felt half-baked. And I'm the only one who's saying any of these things. It's one of those.
There's another critic I follow online, Candace Fredericks, I believe is her name. She also did not like it.
I was surprised enough in my reaction that I didn't really review it. I reviewed it on the radio and didn't write because I was like, I think I got this wrong. But if you also saw and didn't enjoy this movie, please let me know. Camila, sorry about all of that.
Yeah,
That's a lot of excitement. I just I saw they cloned Tyrone finally.
I really liked your piece about that.
Oh, thank you.
Because I didn't blog it on Letterboxd because I felt like I didn't pay attention enough to say that I actually watched it. But I watched it enough to really like your piece on
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it. But it's also like, I mean, I really enjoyed it. But it's one of those movies that definitely, like, you watch it, like, multiple times and you will find different things. Like, all the shit that I, like, spurred out in my piece about explaining the ending, the director came out with, like, a video with, like, all these Easter eggs. And I was like, and I missed, like, a lot of them. I'm like, what the fuck? Like none of this. So it's just, it's fun and it makes you think really hard about a lot of things. Yeah. So I highly recommend it.
What is that actress's name who's also in Marvel's?
Tiana Paris.
She is phenomenal. She is just such a star.
Yeah. I think the first thing I saw her in was Chi-Rock.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. I adore her.
Yeah. She's hilarious. So that's all I really watched. I think it's the only new movie.
I hosted a Q&A after an anniversary screening of The Room.
I saw that you and Mary Beth vlogged that.
With what's his name? Ricky?
Greg Sestero plays Mark.
Mark.
That's Mark. Oh, hi, Mark. I can never fully escape The Room. Like when it first started happening, like in 2008, 2009, I went a lot and then I drifted away because like you only need so much. And then when around The Disaster Artist, I read the book and like, but I hosted screening then and then Mary Beth got into it. Now I'm on stage interviewing him. Like it, given enough time, I will somehow be in The Room retroactively.
Is the dude still alive?
Tommy? Yeah. He seems to be doing fine. Still weird. But Greg Sestero is very nice and makes lots of like scrappy, no budget, independent stuff that whenever he's at a Room event, he's always selling his movies too. So good for him.
Good for him.
Yeah. Let's reveal what movies we're going to make one another watch.
Okay. Okay. Five Heartbeats.
I've been wanting to watch that for a really long time and I thought that maybe you would pick it. So good. Excellent. Okay.
I am also very curious about this and don't mind, but why did you select it?
It is one of my favorite movies. I love Robert Townsend. He is one of the directors that got me into appreciating and wanting to go into filmmaking like very early on. And it's like, it's a lot of funny moments. Like, it's one of the few movies that my family and I would watch together all the time. And then we would, like, to this day, like, we will quote out, like, just random shit from the movie in everyday life. It holds a special place in my heart. And I think it's a phenomenal movie, but
thank you. I think it's a really good choice because it's like, if we were 5 years older and not white, we would have definitely seen this movie already.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this is like filling in a gap that we need filled.
Right on.
I select Carnival of Souls.
Of course you do.
Interesting.
Scary, not at all. There's no violence in this movie.
Okay.
Scary, but no violence. This is the Night of the Living Dead that did not birth a genre. Like Night of the Living Dead, it was made by like workaday industrial filmmakers just doing the thing that they felt like doing. Also became kind of a drive-in hit. It made some money and was well received, but then those filmmakers just went back to being workaday industrial filmmakers. It is like nothing else. You know, it is more like a modern ghost movie, like a modern, you know, what's reality, what's happening to me kind of a ghost movie. It's just over 60 years old and very foundational to people who've seen it, which is a fairly narrow band. And like Night of the Living Dead, it is in the public domain, so it is on every streaming service. Ever. I love this movie and would love for more people to see it, so I am selecting it.
Mine, you might have to rent. It's one of those things where it's like, it's on Amazon Prime with a premium subscription. Mm. Which one?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But it's Joan Micklin-Silver's Between the Lines, which is basically Empire Records, but at an alt weekly.
Oh.
And Jeff Goldblum is in it. And it's great.
When's it from?
Late 70s.
Well, you put us on the spot, and boy, do we look like ourselves.
I know, right? I knew this was gonna be like three wildly different.
Yeah.
And also I love that we were like, oh, we'll come back next week. We need time to think about it.
and then we're all like, no, I know.
No, we know.
Well, I was like knocking around like two other ones. And mainly because of like Oppenheimer and Barbie.
Yes.
Like I was going to either pick two girls and a guy with Robert Downey Jr.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or Lars and the Real Girl. But I assume that you probably both have seen Lars.
I just saw that recently for the first time.
Okay.
And I liked it way more than I expected to.
I mean,
I think it's my favorite Ryan Gosling movie.
I knew that you loved it, and that's like what made me feel safe to watch it.
All of my other choices were either going to be too gross for Robin. Like I was like the Abominable Dr. Fibes or Vampire Circus, or I was like, no, she doesn't want to watch it. Or they were going to be too old for Camilla. It was going to be like, no, I want to make everybody watch Bride of Frankenstein. No, it's not going to land
like
the way.
Bored.
Not going to go the way I want it to go. No, this will be a lot of fun. Now, we can't forget that we have movies to watch until next weekend.
Right.
If you don't start until Sunday, you're not going to make it through all three. And you have to watch your own.
Yes.
You can't skip your own choice. So this will be interesting. Carnival of Souls, Five Heartbeats, and Between the Lines.
Three movies that would never be in any other film festival.
The Little Treat Film Festival. Before we kick that off, November 11th, 1994, what was the number one song in America? When Vampires soared to the top of the box office charts and refused to kiss.
Aaliyah.
We're way too early for Aaliyah. 94?
This is a very distinct time in my life because it's right after we moved to New Jersey. So I'm like trying to like put myself... Moved back to New Jersey. I was born in New Jersey, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Boys to Men.
Yes.
I'll Make Love to You.
Correct.
Yep.
That
was what number one for like most of that year, right?
I'll Make Love to You was number one for 14 straight weeks.
Yes.
And when it left to On Bended Knee.
Also by Boys to Men.
By Boys to Men, which won three of the next 5 weeks. On Bended Knee is basically that song again. Like, this isn't like, oh, and here's the up-tempo one. It was just like, are you getting a little tired? Don't worry, here's another.
Also, 94, not too early for Aaliyah. I lost my virginity to Back and Forth.
All right. Receipts.